Dr. Madiri, does language dictate culture, in your opinion?
Partly, and really only partly. I mean, insofar as has been pointed out, many African people live in two worlds, right? They live in their home culture and in the master culture, the cultures that they come through the colonial experience, English and Afrikaans. So partly, but for an institution like us, it is important to understand the implications of language go beyond even the learning experience. So, for example, they affect staff composition, because had we maintained a 50-50 English-Afrikaans dispensation, that would have meant that you would have needed to appoint more Afrikaans-speaking lecturers. Speaking Afrikaans would have been a requirement, which would have, for the most part, translated into white staff members. That's the first thing. Secondly, in most of the Afrikaans classes, particularly in Pretoria, there were white-only classes. And that has serious implications for some of the material some of us want to teach, you know, because you're teaching lawyers who are going to be serving all kinds of clients and all kinds of communities. If their 4 years or 5 years of learning are situated in white-only spaces, those are serious, serious problems. And they do produce secondary cultural problematics, certain kinds of cultural assumptions about the other and different, which can be allayed if everybody's in the same class and deals with the historical contradictions of our society face to face as opposed to separately. So the question of language is absolutely important as part of how does a society remake itself after so many years of really tragic and violent forms of oppression and brutalization, you know.
But surely it could be said that I'm going to need to choose my words very carefully here, but surely this could be there is an argument that could be made that this is reverse oppression.
No, I don't think the argument could be made that it's reverse oppression. In part, as has been pointed out, because the majority of students here at UP are not first language English speakers.
Okay.
So we're not favoring a group here. We're really making a fairly pragmatic turn here. Yeah.
Prof Kupe?
Yeah, no, I was going to say that really as South Africans, and not just South Africans, as Africans, we all, in a sense, trading in a language that is not of our choice and of our, whether it's Portuguese, French, or English, right? The distinct and interesting things about Afrikaans is that it was developed within this context. But unfortunately, it was then tied by some, not all Afrikaans people, not all Afrikaners, to an oppressive racist system. And remember, not every person who was Afrikaans was racist. The Afrikaans people fought for the struggle for democracy, right? So decoupling Afrikaans from that historical legacy and putting it into the larger pot of languages we can choose as Africans is our real challenge. And we must approach that with positivity within a democratic constitutional framework.
Because?
Yeah, so I think that what we just have to do is we have to refrain from defining Afrikaans or equating it to whiteness, because what you'll find is that more than half of Afrikaans speakers are in fact not white. So if we see at the university space that most Afrikaans speakers are white, then we have to ask the question, okay, well, where are those other Afrikaans speaking students going to, or are they going to university at all? Yeah, so that's what I want to say. And then also on the question that you raised of reverse oppression, I don't think it can be seen as reverse oppression unless you go into people's homes and force them to not speak Afrikaans. I think that would maybe be oppression. But I do think it is a step backwards in terms of what this country has set out to develop all languages in a tertiary academic level. So what I think is that we actually have a lot built up already to accommodate an Afrikaans curriculum at the university. So now we are removing that, and now Prof. Kupe said, okay, maybe one day we can move into a space where we've got a bunch of different languages at the university again. So I do think that wouldn't it just be better to go forward with more languages, and then we don't have to waste all of those resources in 20 years' time to rebuild Afrikaans to where it was already.
Prof. Kupe, what are your feelings?
No, I think that argument is not flawed, if you like. But here, remember the multiple contradictions you had to hold in, partly because of an unfortunate coupling in the past. And also the fact that even if you could go on with Afrikaans, people will be saying, but when are you ever going to start with some African languages as well? So you're happy to go with this, but you do not want to create an equalization situation. Like I said before, choosing English is pragmatic and has its downsides as well, especially if it delays us. That is why I said we shouldn't sleep on the job. From this year onwards, we should put up language experts. So how do we preserve what we had already done in Afrikaans, right? Second, how do you begin to choose one or two African languages and speedily develop an academic language, a research language, and use it? Because this is the interesting thing. All of us here go back home and speak other languages that we grew up with. Absolutely. So the reality of society is a multiplicity and multilingualism. Mm. But in academic institutions, we're in this sort of bus-stop pragmatic way we're trying to use English on. I think we shouldn't delay our own development. Multilingualism, pluralism, democracy, it goes like that.
I agree. Yeah. I wanted to say that when I go home and I speak Venda at home. no. Okay. All right. So this ties in beautifully with the final point that we're going to raise today, and that is the point of inclusivity.